presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of
Comic Dorks.
Thrilling adventure, intense excitement, pounding action, and spine-tingling mystery.
Everybody, and welcome back to Comic Dorks. This is Comic Dorks episode 12. It is Thursday, July 25th, 2013, and we are back with another fresh episode of Comic Dorks post San Diego Comic Con, which is good because there was all kinds of stuff that came out of that business to talk about. Joining me as always, we have, let's shake it up, we got Mark Spagnuolo over there. What's going on, Mark?
Hey, yo, you know, you forgot to mention, more importantly, post-Nerdtacular.
Oh, yeah, dude. I forgot. Earlier in the month. Yeah, it already feels like that was about 8 months ago for me. So.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Yeah, so we'll talk some about that as well. Also, Mr. Scott Kurtz with us. Hello, Scott.
Hey, yo.
Hey. He is truly fresh off the SDCC boat, like a big fresh bucket of chum. I don't know why I just called you a bucket of chum, but I'll take it back.
That's a terrible, it's accurate.
It's not nice at all. And then Steven Schleicher. Hello, Steven.
I am not nearly drunk.
So, yeah, we
Schleicher.
Schleicher. So I saw Mark and Steven at Nerdtacular, and I want to just say a quick shout out to all the Comic Dorks fans who came up and said hi and talked to us. Way more people listening at the when I asked who was listening to that show, I was genuinely pleased. Everyone was like, "Bruh," freaking out. So apparently it's a hit. People like it within the community, and there were lots of nice people saying very nice things about what we're doing. So thank you guys for that. And for those who came, it was really nice to shake your hand, sign your stuff, and then kick you out.
Well, at least that's better than saying shake your stuff and sign your hand.
That's a good point. You make a good point. So let's just throw this to Kurtz real quick about you went to San Diego Comic-Con.
I did.
You were there. And previous to this event, we have talked a couple of times on the show about your not displeasure necessarily with the con itself, but the way it was changing and evolving. You were kind of like, I don't know, bah, something, meh, blah, blah, and it never occurred to me that you were super stoked about exhibiting again. But how did it go? Like, what are your impressions? How'd it go? Was it fun? Did you have a good time? Like, how'd it go?
I had a good time. I had a really good time. But this year was a very different year for me. So my problem with San Diego is, as an exhibitor, I've never been to the show as a convention goer.
Yeah.
I really haven't been to many comic book conventions as a convention goer, to be honest. I usually go to a show because I'm setting up and selling stuff.
Right.
And when you go to a show and you set up stuff, what you do is you pay for a booth, you pay to ship merchandise to the booth, you pay for your hotel and travel. You pay for shipping your stuff back, and then you hope that you sell enough stuff to break even.
Right.
And if you make a profit, awesome. Now, I've been blessed enough that with shows that I can drive to or local shows, I make a great profit. And shows that I fly to that are comic-centric, like the Emerald City Con before I lived here, or the Baltimore Comic Con, or Heroes Convention, I can make a profit even though I've ship books and paid for travel and hotel. And of course, some of those costs are offset when the convention does something really nice, like flies you out or offers your booth for free to be a guest. So this is kind of the reality of someone who sets up and sells stuff at a comic book convention.
Sure.
But for most people, what you do is you pay for a booth, you pay for yourself to get out there and back, you pay for your shit to get out there and back, and you pay for your food while you're out there.
Right.
And it's difficult to break even. But you're at least, even if you just break even or don't break even, you say to yourself, but you know what? I interacted with the fans. I got the word out about my book. So even if you don't break even at a show, it's still beneficial to you as a small vendor.
Sure.
Now, as of 2006, the San Diego Comic-Con and what that crowd is coming for fundamentally shifted. And it started shifting away from people coming to Comic-Con to discover comics.
Right.
Not because they don't love comics, because they do. And there is a subset of the 150,000 people that come to buy back issues and get their comic book signed by Mark Waid and Chris Samnee and all the great artists and They go down to the far end where Artist Alley is. But most people are there because they love comics in a general sense, and they love the toys and the movies and the spectacle. They love the spectacle.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
So what you end up doing as a small vendor is you end up feeling like the house from Up.
All right.
Which is what my friend Chris described me as when he walked past my booth this year.
Okay.
He says, "You look like the house from Up."
No, wait. I'm trying to just naturally figure out what he means in my head, because I like the reference, but I don't think I get it.
Tied a bunch of balloons to his head.
Just this small little house amongst all of this industry that's just going up and not, you know, it's just like all this industry on either side, and then right in the middle is itty bitty house that no one cares about.
I got the house before it leaves, like when it's stuck between the two skyscrapers.
It's just, it's one of these nail houses, you know, that it's just stuck there and never left.
Right.
And that's kind of what it feels like. It's like the independent vendor at San Diego is like someone that refused to sell their house when a highway's being built or a shopping center's being built. So now they're the little guy with the house in the parking lot of a Kohl's because they never sold.
Yeah.
So it sucks to live there, and you're never going to sell it now, and who cares?
Right.
Now, the reason why exhibitors keep coming back, small vendors, you ask, or exhibitors keep coming back, is because once you leave San Diego, you're never getting back in.
Oh, I see.
Oh, really?
Because you establish the fact that you go every year, and the minute you show signs of I'm skip this year, they will your spot will be taken, and they no longer are loyal to you. As
there's San Diego Comic Con and all of its existing or sister conventions like Ape and WonderCon, all work on a point system. So the longer you exhibit there, the more points you have, and the more pull you have.
Okay.
So a new exhibitor coming in, or someone on a waiting list, doesn't have as many points as me, who's been going for 10 years. So when, for example, when I wanted to expand this year, we had an exhibitor leave and I expanded my booth out by an extra 10 by 10. I probably got that space sooner than someone on a waiting list because I have more points than them, and I've been exhibiting for 10 years and I will exhibit for more than 10 years. So, but what that does is it kind of breeds this kind of weird kind of social political bullshit, and it's what I call the San Diego game, which is someone walks around and says, I mean, you get asked a million times by other exhibitors, so how's your con?
Yeah.
And then you lie to them and say, oh, it's going fucking great.
Yeah.
I mean, my God, the money's pouring in. There's someone under this desk right now giving me a, you know, I mean, holy crap, best con ever. And they go, oh, us too. And then you both leave and go, yeah, okay, bullshit. And he says, bullshit.
Yeah.
Because hey, Scott, I just want to ask Scott a question, just from an outside observer's perspective, who's fairly new to the con scene in general. It does seem like the con, at least when I was there, has two halves. Like, there's the old con, and then there's the new spectacle side of things. Is that still true at the con? And are there not enough people interested anymore in the old style of the con to really make it worth your time?
Moreover, is it split like literally split like that? Is that how they're arranging it?
No, no. There used to be that the halls A through like F, which is the right half of the con, it was exhibitors. Vendors.
Yeah.
So people selling t-shirts, people selling comic books, people selling toys, small press. They added web comics to that side. And then smaller exhibitors, people that are self-publishing or independent publishing comics. Web comics got put in there. And then halls H through, I don't know what the heck it goes to, Z or whatever, is all the media companies and the bigger publishers. So you have Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Image, and then you have Boom Studios and Oni Press, and then you have Lucasfilm and Weta and Lego and Nickelodeon and, you know, all of that stuff, and The Walking Dead and AMC, and then you have the video games. And then at the very, 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 very end, against the wall, is what's known as Artist's Alley.
Yeah.
And it's two rows of people that they've given tables to because they don't sell anything. It's literally, I really like Chris Samnee's work on Daredevil. I want him to sign my comics. I'm showing up to have him sign my comic, and he's there.
Yeah.
No, the con is the con. Are there people that are walking through and picking up a Minecraft pick at one of the booths that's selling Minecraft stuff? Yes, I was one of them. I was also someone who bought a Totoro plush at the Giant Robot Japanese plush and vinyl store on that half of the booth. I stopped by the Peanuts booth to see what new stuff they had. And, you know, but even I, who's very into comics, didn't go around asking people, tell me about your comic.
Right.
And nobody does. No one really does. So this year was very different for me. I got to step away from my booth. Normally, you show up Tuesday night. Wednesday morning, you set up your booth. Preview night's Wednesday night. And then from Wednesday through Sunday, you're at your booth.
Yeah, open you're to close. Kind of glued there, right.
This year, what we did was, since I just partnered with We Love Fine,
yeah.
I'm an official licensor of We Love Fine now. So all PvP and Table Titans merchandise is produced by We Love Fine. You can go to welovefine.com and buy it all. New designs every week. Also a plug. But since I partnered with them, I said to them, do you want to run the booth? Just set up a booth
yeah.
in my booth and just sell all my stuff. And then what's left over of my booth that doesn't fill my stuff, sell whatever you want.
Right.
And they said, absolutely. So if you went by the PvP booth this year, it was bigger than normal and there was all this amazing banners that they printed. And you could buy all the PvP and Table Titan shirts and prints and books, as well as a My Little Pony shirt, an Adventure Time shirt, and a Marvel Comics shirt, because they sell all that stuff.
Right.
And they ran the whole thing. I had – once a day I showed up for a couple hours to sign, and then I left.
And other than that, you're what? So this year you were a con-goer this year then, really?
This year I was a con-goer, and guess what I discovered?
Mm.
You don't have to buy a badge. There is a whole second convention – outside the con. Oh,
I saw you tweet on this and I was like, you know, that's so right. So many people are going out. And I remember a couple of years ago, I think it started when they went over to the baseball field and they did that zombie run a couple of years ago. And I think that was the thing that kind of pushed people out and said, hey, you can do stuff all through the gas lamp district and all over the place.
Okay. So there's a steakhouse called Lou and Mickey's that's right under the gas lamp Hilton. And it's been our tradition for the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. That Sunday night, we go to Lou and Mickey's and we celebrate Comic-Con being over by all getting steaks.
Yeah.
That place was bought by GameSpot for the entire week.
Oh, man.
Wow.
All the tables go in the back. All these video games go up. You walk in. You play tons of console. It was just an arcade game. It was just Xboxes. And people walking around handing you hors d'oeuvres for free.
Wow.
No badge needed. The gas lamp Hilton had a terrace right outside of it. Walk up there. Stand in line for just a little bit. No badge needed. Walk up there. What is it? Oh, Namco Bandai set up a free play arcade. Dig Dug, Pac-Man.
Ooh.
Mappy, they had a live stream going. They had chiptunes concerts going. They had these young kids who play all this music, this really awesome, like all the Scott Pilgrim, like video game chiptunes music.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They do it all with Game Boys.
Wow.
They're pro, cool. And they're just having a fucking party up there.
That's crazy. So, and wait, is this the steak? Hold on. The steak place? Is it the place you saw Cisco, Captain, Commander Cisco in there that time? Was that the place? Where was that?
That was one San Diego. We went to the Westgate Hotel.
Yeah,
and he was down in the bar, the Westgate, with Frakes.
You guys were just hanging out with that guy. That's great.
Every year, the webcomics people used to go to the Westgate. John Rosenberg from Goats knew the bartender, and he would get us in there. And one year, just Avery Brooks and Jonathan Frakes are down there, and they see us come in, and they start to get to leave, and Brooks just goes and sits down and starts playing piano and grabs Chris. Straubover is awesome. It was amazing.
Maybe the coolest thing ever. Yeah, I loved hearing that story.
It's nuts.
So the point is that there's this extended thing now that didn't used to. I mean, how new does this feel? Like last couple of years, this year, like what?
Well, the first time I heard of someone doing something other than there's crazy stuff like. It's always been bullshit. Like, hey, you know the new Tron movie is coming out. And we've set up Flynn's Arcade. And you're like, who gives a shit? It's a movie promotion. Or how about like what they do every year is Sci-Fi rents out this one restaurant. And for a while, when Eureka was a show, they made it Cafe Diem.
Oh, yeah, it's Cafe Diem, yeah.
Yeah, and then you go in there and you buy like alpha eggs and stuff and, you know, Warehouse 13 omelets. And then at the end, they hand you their bill and they say, imagine a greater day. And you're like, oh, you sweet thing. Did they really make you say that? But what I'm talking about now is like a bunch of artists decided, screw the convention center. We'll set up our own con. So they rent out a place that's called Trickster.
Mm.
And like Mignola and Scott Morris and all these indie artists just have all their stuff set up. And they've got all these exclusive, really cool prints, and you just – it's like six blocks from the convention center, and it's just this mini con in a hotel, and it's awesome.
Doesn't that seem – that seems really interesting. Doesn't that seem like a thing that potentially – I don't know that their goal is to not subvert. Well, I guess maybe the word is subvert. Subvert what is the normal thing, which is good.
No. You don't understand.
Isn't part of it though is the fact that there's no room in the convention, and the San Diego, the city, is being slow in expanding the convention space.
Yeah, and let me ask ask a secret person something. But I believe that San Diego Comic Con gets a cut of what the gas lamp hotels get.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Well, because they do have all the whatever they're not called partner hotels, but the convention hotels.
They approve all of it. Do they approve Trickster, Secret Person?
Hey, I know who the Secret Person is.
I knew
that is. So is that true too? Wow.
They approve and promote it. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
So does anyone think that this is like heading toward like an E3 bubble burst where this is going to become so expensive for some of these companies to do these major displays? People are trying to separate, segregate from the primary group to do what they want to do with this con. It feels like it's going to start to get too big.
Doesn't that feel possible when you have tickets that are already sold out before the other con's over?
All that needs to happen is if San Diego had a convention center as big as
Vegas.
The Las Vegas convention.
Yes.
Here's the problem, okay? Comic-Con doesn't want to leave San Diego.
Right.
They don't. Because where are they going to go? They're going to go in Anaheim? Anaheim? It's in South Central.
Yeah.
And it's LA Convention Center is in South Central.
Anaheim's not bad. You're right near Disneyland.
Anaheim's not bad, but it's in Disney. There's right across from Disneyland, and no one's going to do anything but go to Disneyland. So they don't want that either.
Yeah.
And Vegas, they're on the Strip.
Yeah. That's
so
true.
San Diego is perfect. The convention center needs to do its expansion.
Yeah, that's a thing.
They've promised to do that, and apparently that's why San Diego went ahead and signed the contract.
Yep.
Till 2015.
2015.
But did you see any? Was there any construction?
No. Well, listen, to be honest, I didn't go to that end of the con.
That end of the con. You stayed away. From Hall H, and
I left my booth, and I walked towards that end of the con because my booth is webcomics is in like the 1200s,
mm-hmm.
And it goes down to like the FU hundreds. But I got up to my booth. I started walking down there, and I got maybe three rows down where the Peanuts booth was, and it just was a wall of people. And I said, nope, and just went outside.
Yeah.
When we were there in 2006, and again, this was quite a while ago, but you said so the same, Kurtz, that it's become a spectacle. We went to go see that Superman Returns panel, and we got there a half hour before the doors open, and there was already a line. There's people that are standing up days ahead of time to go see those Hall H panels. Yeah. I can just imagine the mass of people that crowd into that area. Yeah.
That's the thing that sucks, though. It is so hard. I know when we went, we were isolated to the floor because we didn't want to lose half of our day waiting for a one-hour panel.
Yeah,
if not more than half of your day.
Especially if you're only there for, some people are only there for a couple of days. They buy a couple of day passes or whatever, and they don't want to sit in line for most of that. By the way, just an update, deadline.com says 2016 is how long their contract goes?
Okay. I was watching in the hotel. They had them on the news. It was the first news story about Comic-Con that wasn't, look at these guys. Whoa.
Yeah.
Comic-Con's back. And ain't it crazy? And then all the newscasters goes, I wish I was going. they do like to have fun.
Right. Those kids.
No, but it was like, hey, we've got a real problem. Everyone's super frustrated. And it was like, here's a vendor. And he's like, this sucks. And here's an exhibitor. He's like, this hall is crap. And he goes, here's some people that are attending. And they're like, we don't want to go in the hall. It's too crowded. And then they talk to the guy that runs Comic-Con, and they're like, are you going to leave? He's like, we're going to try everything we can not to leave. We don't want to leave San Diego.
Right.
It's like, what if they don't expand by 2017? He goes, well, I don't know. We'll have to figure it out, but they have to expand.
Yeah. It's in the city's best interest to do whatever they have
they bring
to do.
It brings in millions and millions of dollars into the city just over a four-day weekend, man.
That's why it surprised me that they're slow to do it.
I have a question just in general. San Diego, and maybe you don't need the bridge for the rest of the year, and I understand that, but why don't you take some of that San Diego money and build a bridge over the tracks?
Yeah, I've heard this. This is a common complaint this year. That bridge
Did somebody?
Well, it's just there's no bridge.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just like this shitty way into town. Like, I've been through there in off secret, months, but not...
Secret person says there is a bridge over the tracks, but it's way down the street. It leaves from Petco Park, and no one walks down
there. Nobody goes down there.
Down that far. Yeah.
Well, and all my friends who live there freaking hate this, so it doesn't, they don't matter. They don't care about this argument.
Kind of on the flip side of what you're talking about, Scott, is from my perspective and updating the website, to me it was maybe just as exciting, maybe more so, because all the news stories are coming into us and we're looking at all the live feeds and we're looking at all the other sites reporting stuff. So we're getting stuff probably faster than half the people or more of the people that are at the convention. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's really exciting because this stuff is coming in within 30 seconds of announcements.
Yeah,
I'm not against.
We're turning around and getting it up.
Right.
I'm not against.
Even people who don't go to it, it's exciting for us.
Well, sure.
I'm pro Hall H. I think one of the cool things about San Diego and one of the cool things about the spectacle of it, it sucks as an exhibitor because people are up there instead of buying your stuff. But like I said, once I realized I don't want to be an exhibitor anymore, or I don't need to worry about it because I've been lucky enough to partner with someone that'll handle that for me, and you know, so who cares?
Right.
Once I realize that I'm not on the floor going, oh God, what's going to happen with the money I spent? You learn to like San Diego because the stress of it for you is gone. But the cool thing about Hall H is that. I have a friend. He lives in Dallas, and he really loves Breaking Bad. I mean, he loves Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And I got to see on Facebook everything he did at San Diego to do Breaking Bad stuff. The Gorin Brothers Hat Company was selling a Heisenberg's pork pie hat. He went and bought that. He got a bunch of cool swag from one of these booths. And then he borrowed some linens from a friend's hotel, and he camped outside in 66 degree San Diego weather to under the tarps, and they were all having a party out there. And then he went and got to see the Breaking Bad panel in the morning, and it was all the Breaking Bad people and Doctor Who people, and they all had a wonderful time camping out. And for them, it's very, very special. They camped out, they got in line, they got to experience something, and the people in Hall H that show up, they all know how long people wait, and they always put on a great show and show them something awesome. And it's frustrating for me, but to their credit, now listen, no one's a bigger Godzilla fan than me. I am dying to know what the new Godzilla looks like. Yeah. And twice, people in Hall H have seen what the new Godzilla looks like.
Right.
And they go online and describe him maybe.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But you can't find one phone footage. Yeah. You can't find anything that's leaked. And it's because they waited in line. And damn it, if they're not, you know, why would everyone else get to see it? So I mean, Loki came out at the Marvel panel and surprised everyone, and there was all the lights go off, and then there's a big thunderclap, and the light flashes, and then there's Hiddleston in full Loki gear, and he's calling the mewing cows, and he's telling Kevin Feige to get off stage, and he's like, where are your Avengers now? And everyone's losing their shit. That's awesome. God bless them for doing that.
It is awesome. Yeah.
It sucks when it cuts to you back at your booth and it's like
Well, okay. So the spectacle of it, Loki coming out, him doing his thing. The one thing I did hear though from a lot of people, I was listening to the Tested podcast and those guys over there were there doing coverage all week and they didn't even know about the Superman Batman thing we'll talk about here in a minute. They didn't know about the Ultron thing. They didn't know about any of that stuff until they were home back in San Francisco compiling stories and like, what? This wasn't it? But when did this happen? Like, that's the part that weirds me out, that you can be, I guess you tailor it to whatever you want. So if you're a big Breaking Bad fan, you do like your friend did. You go and you freaking focus in on that, and that is your con. Like, that's the experience you wanted. You had a great time. You got all the stuff you wanted, and you really zeroed in on the one thing that just really, you know, you really wanted. But if you want to be a guy that gets everything, it's like, well, how do you hear? So you heard about those things? That was all coming through?
It's not like you're at your booth and some kid in a fucking newsie caps runs into the hall and goes, Batman, Superman, Man of Steel 2, it's happening. Avengers, Age of Ultron. And everyone goes,
I want that to be true so bad.
Hear ye.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're sitting in your booth.
We replace that with Twitter.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, I mean, you see it like everyone else sees it. You see it over Twitter or someone comes by and goes, Superman, Batman. You go, what? And they go, yeah, check Twitter. I mean, I learned a lot by going back to in my hotel room at night, looking on the computer and reading all the sites.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, there's no way to know it.
It's impossible
if you're not up in the hall,
right?
And then if someone's in the hall with their computer live blogging it, the internet's going to find out before, because no one's left the hall yet to tell anybody.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I just feel like you came back with such a different experience because of this whole getting away from your booth thing.
You can't look, San Diego. God bless anyone that exhibits there and does well. And like I said, I'm such an outlier when it comes to this because PvP has been around for 15 years and I've made some really blessed connections, and I can do something like say, oh, we love Final. Just run the booth for me and sell my stuff there, and I don't need to be there, you know, at the show.
Right.
But I was there, and here's the really funny thing: like, some guy would come up and say, "Oh, I want this Panda Espresso shirt, and Joss Whedon is my master now is a really funny shirt. I'd like that in a large, and also I want the Picard LARP shirt in a large, and then I want this Adventure Time shirt." And then the guy that runs We Love Fine would go, "These shirts here you bought? This guy here made them. He's the cartoonist. This is his comic strip PvP." And they'd go, "Uh-huh, yeah, nice, nice." and then the guy that runs it would go, "These are his books, and he's selling books." And the guys would look at the book and goes, "Okay." Like, they just don't care.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's not like he's mad at me. He's just like, "All right, neat.
Yeah.
Can I have my shirts now?" I gotta go buy some churros.
That must be weird. That must be a weird feeling. Is it? What do you mean? I don't know. It's weird. Oh, I love that shirt by you, but he doesn't know what you. I mean, I don't know. My impression of what that booth is. It should be Scott Kurtz all day, all the time at that booth, and that's why they're flocking over there. But you're saying no, they just get whatever's catching their eye and whatever hits their little nerd fancy, and then they leave.
It's been that way for a couple years, and when you're sitting in the booth and you've spent all the money and you don't know what the point was, it can get you down and get you depressed.
Yeah.
It really can. But the truth of the matter is that it's not a bad thing. It's – look, my dad loved Xena Warrior Princess. Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Watched it every week it was on. Watches the reruns. Has the DVD. And if I said, "Hey, that's Sam Raimi," he'd go, I don't know who that is. He just likes what he likes. He doesn't need to know how it was made.
Right.
Okay, and it's perfectly, absolutely acceptable for someone to love Adventure Time and Superman and Catbug and not care who made it.
Mm.
Comic nerds do. We do. We care about it.
Right.
And we get into the minutia of it, but it's okay for them not to like that. That show is not for that. Now, if you go to Baltimore Comic Con, there's a higher mix of people who do care. And then if you go to SPX, they get mad if your stuff's too good. Like, it's like now it's not just who made it, it's what they were thinking when they made it. Now at SPX, you know, like, why are you making it?
Yeah.
Are you making it because you love comics? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
You just the problem is that San Diego used to be this con where people did care. And now now that it's not that, everyone's like, "What happened? What's wrong with me?" Nothing's wrong with you. The crowd changed.
Yeah, and you seem to have a bit of perspective about it that I haven't heard from some other exhibitors, and I think that's probably healthy. But
the only reason I have it is because I decided this was my last year exhibiting.
Yeah,
because San Diego has been trying to tell me for years, you don't need to exhibit here, but every year it's like, well, I can't not exhibit because then
I'll lose my points.
Because then everyone in webcomics, well, that's one thing. Like, what if it changes and I want to come back?
Yeah.
And San Diego's like, "I won't change. This is the way it is now." And I'm like, but then everyone in webcomics knows that I left. Everyone in webcomics knows I don't want to make money. Yeah. I can't make money at this show. No one's making money at this show. Or they're working their butt off to make it.
Right.
And you're 42 years old, man, and maybe you need some rest now.
You put in your dues, dude. It's 10 years a long time. Or 10 plus, I should say.
Yeah.
Well, let's dive into some of the stuff that was revealed. Steven, the Superman Batman thing was kind of a seismic announcement, but they didn't really talk much about it. What
know? They didn't. So what they did was about an hour before they made the announcement, Variety and Hollywood Reporter came out and said, hey, Batman and Superman are going to be in the same movie. And everyone started scrambling, going, there's no press releases. There's nothing going on about this. And then right at the very end, I mean, they were actually over time for the Warner Brothers panel, which had already been going on for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Zack Snyder comes up on stage and says, yes, we're doing a Man of Steel movie, and Batman's going to be in it.
And then out.
Yeah, logo, lights out. That was it, and people lost their shit.
Yeah.
They did more. He did more than that.
What else did he
do? There was a little bit more than that. I mean, they had
They read a line.
He said Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, he said, listen, if you want to know the kind of feel of the movie, is this line is important, and it's the line where Bruce says, Clark, I want you to remember who defeated you. I want you to remember who was it had their boot on your neck.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. So,
and so now, post the con, we find out that the movie might be called Batman versus Superman or Superman versus Batman. But if people don't if people are thinking that even though Snyder said, hey, we're not adapting The Dark Knight Returns, there is a big chunk in The Dark Knight Returns that's just Batman and Superman kicking the crap out of each other.
A lot of people have a fundamental problem with this whole arrangement because I know it's the eternal nerd fight. Who would win in the fight? You've got the cunning and the technology and the money of Batman, and you got the Superman who has can't be stopped. So all you got to do is give Batman a ring of kryptonite, and you're pretty much golden. Like, there's all these stupid nerd arguments that go on forever and ever. But I actually think there's a really interesting tale to tell there. But it goes to Scott Kurtz's and the rest of us, I think, our general dissatisfaction with Man of Steel and his hatred of it. It goes back to, can they do that, even this story, right, which is Boy Scout versus Vigilante, one way of thinking about how to deal justice versus another.
So Snyder did come out and say, hey, that whole thing that happened at the end of Man of Steel, we're going to address that in the next movie.
Oh, he did. I missed that. I didn't know he talked about that.
Yeah, this had come out later, and Goyer said he was still working on it. Of course, everyone from Man of Steel is returning. Christian Bale is not. Christopher Nolan is hoping to produce along with a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. You're right. It'll be interesting to see how they do this. What was that movie from a few years ago? It was like X versus Sniper or whatever it was.
It was Antonio Banderas' thing, is that the one?
And Lucy Liu, and it was just them fighting each other for the whole movie.
Yeah, I remember that. I
would pay to see Superman and Batman fight for 2 hours.
For 2 hours? I don't know, man.
Well, I wonder if having the presence of Batman in this situation might, I don't know if it helps or hurts the whole Kurtz wanting to see Superman become who Superman's supposed to be. And we're hoping that he might be able to redeem that in whatever this next film is going to be.
I feel like it upstages him a little bit, you mean?
Is it going to change the focus? Are we still going to just be like, this is a shitty Superman, and because it's so focused on a struggle between these two guys now that we can't even really develop Superman any further?
Hmm. Well, but I think that if they're addressing the murder that happened at the end of the Man of Steel, spoiler, the plan is that they'll do Batman versus Superman or World's Finest or whatever it is, then Flash the next year, and then Justice League the year after that.
Right.
So if they're building to something, yeah, Superman does have to change.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see what happens. Production on this movie is supposed to start next year, and it's supposed to be in theaters by 2015.
Scott, you, given your stance on the Superman business lately in the film, how do you feel about this? Have hope? Excited? Not? Like, where are you at?
I have nothing to say about a movie that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
I don't know how much. Look.
I don't believe that, by the way. I think you have plenty to say.
No,
about this.
I. There's no need to judge a movie that doesn't fucking exist yet. Period.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll do what they want to do. I think that both Goyer and Zack Snyder have decided that. What they're interested in doing as a filmmaker is exploring a different side of Superman. A lot of people enjoy that movie, and God bless them. I'm thrilled that they're able to enjoy it. I was not, but that doesn't mean it wasn't a good movie or an enjoyable movie, and that it's wrong for anyone to have enjoyed Man of Steel. That's not the Superman I want to see. And I do like these deconstructions of Superman where it's like, what would someone with that kind of power, what kind of mistakes would they make, and how would it affect the world and them? And we see it in things like Irredeemable and these other kind of analog movies. And Goyer and Snyder wanted to do it with Man of Steel, and so they've got Superman. They want to deconstruct Superman using Superman. I think that's ill-advised. And every time I talk to a person as a kid and I say, they go, I liked the movie, but it wasn't really Superman, but I liked it. I go, would you bring your kid? And they say, no. So that to me seems like any Superman movie you can't bring your kids to makes me a little sad. But if I had to speculate what I think they're going to do, I think that they're going to continue to explore what they're interested in exploring, which is, you know.
Death.
Not death. Not death.
Dark.
Dark. But look, dark a lot of people, a lot of people find Superman boring because what are you going to do against a guy that can do anything, right?
Yeah.
And I always say that there's 75 years it's been of Superman, and there's been plenty of writers who had the chops to tell good Superman stories.
Yeah.
And usually the writers who don't have the chops to tell good Superman stories tell change who Superman is. And that's what Goyer and Snyder did. So in my opinion, they're not very good writers because there's a way to do a good Superman story. You don't have to deconstruct them.
Right.
You don't have to point out that it's silly. You don't have to make him a bad guy.
Right. Would you ever – I know you make fun – you've had your Batman cartoons and you've got your
Lolbat.
Whatever the – Lolbat going on.
The Lolbat,
would you,
yeah.
Would you ever take on if someone approached you at DC – and said, hey, would you like to write one of the Superman adventures that they have on the digital? Would you tackle that?
Absolutely.
Do you have a story?
Yeah, you got one all set?
I don't, but I don't think it would take me long to come up with one. It would involve parents.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, there's a million things about Superman I'd want to discuss. And it would all, but I think it would always end up with him deciding he's not going to quit. It would be Superman deciding that, despite as bad as it's getting, he's not going to stop believing in us.
Yeah.
It would be something to that effect. It would just be fun.
Yeah,
you know, it would just be fun.
So if that, but so I, here's the worry I have I, is that Batman's going to come into this thing and there's going to be an effort to not have him upstage Superman, but the other way around, because this will be primarily a Superman vehicle and this is Batman coming into it. I feel like Batman's going to get the short change here, and it won't be Batman the way we want Batman. They're going to put him in a weird light.
It's not even going to be the Batman that we know from Batman, because.
Could be. It could be
that,
Bale.
That book's closed.
Well, more than likely, Snyder and Goyer, if they continue to explore what they want, what they clearly are interested in, it'll probably be Batman deciding Superman's a threat and jumping in.
Yeah.
And exploring it. I mean, they invoke the Dark Knight Returns, and Miller had a very, very cynical viewpoint of Superman in that book. And it was that he was a conservative tool of the
Yeah, he was a pawn of the UN.
He was a pawn of the government. Yep. And it was just – Superman became this embodiment of Miller's liberal hate for conservatism.
Yeah.
And guess what? Now we get Goyer and Snyder giving us their bullshit Hollywood liberal take on this. Wow, fucking original. You guys did it. Congratulations. Well,
I knew we could open that wound again if we tried hard enough.
You know, when they say that this isn't going to be an adaptation of Dark Knight Returns and then they – quote from the book, I get the same feeling that I got when I got to that moment in Star Trek II that you lied to us.
Yeah, they are. But they're also, I mean, they're trying to appease a crowd that will respond to the idea Miller's work is being invoked. But genuinely, this is like a thing that if you'd asked me when I was 12, I wish for this. Wish for a Superman Batman versus, and then finally figure out they need each other and then take on the world of evil. Like this whole idea sounds great.
But that's
the
classic trope, right? When the two heroes meet, they have to fight. I mean, we saw it you see it in comic books all the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know that they're going to have to fight before they figure out that they have to get along.
I'm down with it. I'm down with that. I just don't know how in the hands of this particular director and writer, I don't know how this all fleshes out. I know how that same dynamic fleshed out in the Avengers. And it worked great. Nobody was happy with each other when they first got all their business together. And there was some big fighting going on and infighting and then trust and then hard-earned trust. And, you know, all that stuff, it was really well handled. And that was a big ensemble piece. You're talking about two, you know, key characters here. It seems like it ought to be easy on the face of it. But I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. And like Scott says, you can't judge till it comes out. But I'm
already, guys, don't listen. This thing is going to come out next year. It's not going to start filming next year.
Right.
It's going to come out next year. So guess what?
Yeah.
We can speculate. but don't think they haven't already fucking written this thing.
Oh yeah, it's done.
It's done.
Yeah,
Had it done before Man of Steel came out.
Yeah, well, that was always their plan, right? Just make it. Yes. The only thing that would have stopped any of this was if that thing would have tanked financially, and it didn't do. You know, it didn't do Iron Man 3 numbers, but it did just fine.
Oh yeah, yep. $680 million, I think, worldwide is where it's at now.
That's not chump change. Did all right with that. All right, so we got that coming. The other big, other big announcements. Pretty much the whole Guardians of the Galaxy cast is now known. They made a big presentation, made a big stink about it. Holy crap! What's his name? Pratt. When did he buff up? What's that guy's diet? Holy shit! The guy from Parks and Recreation.
He got buffed for Zero Dark 30, but he's even more buffed.
Yeah, blew my mind. Like, who is this guy? And my wife's like, oh my! And I'm like, shut up. he's kind of fat and doughy in that Parks and Rec. But anyway, that looks way more exciting than I have been giving it credit for. I just thought it was too weird of a property, but I feel pretty good about it. And maybe it's the hype and the gleam of the show and how they hyped it up and stuff. But I watched a bunch of that panel. I'm pretty stoked about that.
Now, they didn't say who was playing Rocket Raccoon or Groot yet.
Yeah.
And they still are very mum on who will be playing the big bad, which we learned is going to be Thanos in this movie.
So hold on, who's the plant dude?
What's his name? They didn't.
That's Groot.
So Groot, yeah. but clearly that concept art, they're going for like big tree ant, you know, looking CGI creature thing instead of just a plant.
Right.
which is
they're not going to have the little dancing plant with glasses on.
So hold on, did they say Thanos or no?
No.
Not at the panel they didn't.
Oh, where are we getting it?
The bad guy is the Collector. It's Del Toro.
Oh, is it
one of them?
Yeah,
one
Benicio
of
Benicio Del Toro.
Yeah, you don't make your hero movies without three villains, right? Isn't that how it works? Usually, the bad ones anyway. Spider-Man 3.
That's how you
3.
Gotta do it.
Yeah. So you say Thanos, the Collector?
I say Thanos is going to be in it.
Okay, because we don't. What about Avengers: Age of Ultron, which we haven't talked about yet? Ultron. So wait, before we get to that, anything else about Guardians of the Galaxy that we should know about? Like, what Vin Diesel was supposed to be involved? What's his deal? We don't know.
That's the thing that we're supposedly going to find out about.
All right, my money's on Groot, but that's just me.
Well, he did voice of Iron Giant, so he could very easily walk around going Groot.
Yeah, and somebody here on the show, I don't remember who it was, but you guys, somebody here predicted that the raccoon would be.
I think it was Steven.
Yeah, I think it was. You think they would go like rough and tough and gruff with the raccoon instead of...
Although, what's his name from Boogie Nights? What else has he been in?
Marky
John
Mark?
C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly. Right.
Yeah, his name has popped up a couple of times around that character.
Well, he's definitely... He was there. But they didn't say who he was? I thought he was on the panel, wasn't he?
No, he wasn't on the panel.
Who am I thinking of? Some other goofy-looking dude. That doesn't matter.
That would be Benicio.
Maybe that was.
Oh no, that would be Karen Gillan, who shaved off her head.
That's right. She looked really.
No, good. You're thinking of Michael Rooker.
Oh, am I thinking? I am thinking of Michael Rooker, who I love, by the way. So I'm pretty stoked about him being involved in whatever he does. I don't care what it is. But that girl, I thought Sinead O'Connor was was pranking everybody. That was really weird.
No.
So that's going on. Avengers: Age of Ultron. We now have the title. That leans into all sorts of speculation and thoughts, but what, Stephen, did we actually learn from the announcement?
Well, so again, they did basically the same thing with Batman Superman and saying, hey, the movie's going to be Age of Ultron. Credits, everybody walks out of the panel. A couple days later, we find out that from Joss that it is not going to be an adaptation of the comic book arc that just finished over at Marvel, and it won't include Hank Pym as the creator of Ultron.
All right.
Right.
Which is
exciting.
When you think about it, though, if you watch that first movie, the Iron Man costume kind of looks like Ultron, especially around the mask area.
Sure.
And when you've got the Jarvis AI,
the trailer they showed there showed an Iron Man mask being beaten up and sparked and ripped into an Ultron face.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why haven't I? This didn't get leaked. Is that shown someplace?
Nobody said anything about that.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wait, hold on. They showed that, and that's not anywhere I can see it, is it?
No.
Damn it.
Hold on. I just read it today.
I would love to see that. Okay, so Sweet. Ultron. This has nothing to do with the recent age, whatever. What's the
comic? No, not the Age of Cult, Age of Ultron comic.
Yeah.
No, it has nothing to do with that.
Now, it's funny. This is just an interesting point. And not being familiar with Ultron, like, at all. Like, I'm way behind the eight ball on this. I don't know about you, Mark, but this Ultron guy is brand new to me.
Yeah,
so,
me too.
And I haven't read that series, so I don't know what's going on.
What?
But I have to imagine. I know.
He's like the Avengers' oldest foe.
I know, dude. I'm a latecomer Avengers guy. Because for a long time, those guys seemed like, I don't know, ghetto Justice League to me. But anyway, that's a long story. I could tell a different day. And I love him now. But I'm just not all that into like the history of Ultron. So here's the thing. Is they don't care. Like the comic and the movie thing... I don't know if I'm saying this right, but they don't care that there's confusion about that. Like, because I know there was. Like, when this was announced, people were flipping out going, oh, I wonder if it's based on this series. And then I think Whedon, the day after or later.
Yeah, he came out the next day or so after, said nope.
Yeah, he said there's nothing to do with that. And you can see why people might be confused, though. Age of Ultron.
It's a, no.
No?
No. Right. No, they're not.
They're not confused.
Because, no, they're not. Because at most... 150,000 people read Age of Ultron, and 2 million
that's what
people
I'm gonna say.
Saw the event.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
It's the Hollywood audience. It's not the comic book audience.
You just really. Exactly that was exactly the point I was trying to say. You just said it better than me. So anyway, so who cares? But it does look cool, and so there's nowhere to see this video. I would die. I would.
See. I thought that they posted. I haven't seen it yet, but I thought that they posted the entire panel online
for
people to see. Oh. I know we've got Loki's intro.
Yeah, that I saw.
Online.
Yeah, I saw
and
that.
I think they posted the whole panel.
Okay.
I have to go back and look.
I will go check that out because I would love
but,
to I mean, see
it,
that
it makes it makes sense to have Tony Stark end up being the creator for Ultron.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, I mean, Jarvis practically was every Iron Man in Iron Man 3.
Yeah, exactly.
All it takes is that AI getting a little bit smarter and a little bit resentful, and you have Ultron. So, Scott, real quick, yeah. Hank Pym is... was a scientist in the Avengers. He invented the Pym particles that let him shrink into Ant-Man or grow into Giant-Man.
Right. And he's in this.
In the comics.
Oh, right. Got it.
And Hank Pym said, I bet I can make an artificial intelligence. That'll be fucking easy. And he did, and it turned evil and became Ultron. And then his second attempt made the Vision. So that's how we got the Vision in Ultron. And Ultron shows up and tries to kill the Avengers once a decade.
Once, yeah.
That's why everyone's like, oh, Age of Ultron. If Ultron's in it, that means Hank Pym's in it. It's like, no, it's not going to be Hank Pym.
So
this is a cinematic Ultron.
It's basically comic speak for, Wrath of Khan or...
No, I don't think so.
You know what I'm saying? Well, what I mean is they're invoking a villain and the common moviegoer who loves the Avengers but has no idea about any of this history. This just sounds like a cool, scary dude.
Yeah.
Sounds like that. I got it. That's cool. I would like to actually catch up on some of that, but I'm one of those guys, I hate to admit it, but Avengers or Iron Man, you know, gets new life in 2008. The movie's huge and it makes a big splash, and I'm suddenly like, I guess some of these Marvel guys that I thought were kind of B tier aren't that bad. They're kind of A tier now, and it got me excited, and then I started reading some Avenger comics, none of which have ever involved Ultron that I know of so far.
Oh, man. I mean, everyone forgets Iron Man was such a second tier hero until the movies.
No, he totally was. Like that's just how he in the 80s when I was growing up. No, you didn't think of Iron Man as like. There were some cool comics, but nobody was going, "Oh, he's as big as Batman or Superman." Nobody talked like that, but he totally is now. So it is what it is. There's a reason you're paying $20 for him in that stupid Marvel game, and $10 for everybody else.
Before we get off the whole movie topic, I don't know about you guys, but it's. When we see all these options, it's like, I know it's not perfect. A lot of these adaptations are definitely not perfect, and we can sit here and have a podcast about how shitty these things are, but at least they're being made.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is these, you can have this popcorn flick that happens to involve some characters that you like, even if they're not portrayed the way you want them to be. It just feels like a golden age for comic book adaptation in Hollywood.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know, and it's certainly not perfect. But sure. I love it. I absolutely love it. Just half of the shit, I don't even know what's going on, but I'm going to go to the movie and be one of those noobs that finds out about it and tries to go backwards and figure it all out.
There's a reason that Robert Downey Jr. is the single highest paid ex-cocaine addict in Hollywood. You know, like he – that's terrible. But he, I mean, it's his turnaround is actually kind of freaking – amazing. That guy was destitute and done for a while, and now
he's a joke.
Yeah. Now he's back and just enormous and makes more money in Hollywood than anybody based on a comic book of what we used to think of as a B-tier character. Like, it's you're right. It's this crazy time. And some of it's being done so right. Like, Wolverine opens this weekend. People are digging on it. I'm really excited that it might be good. So, you know, I was real disappointed with Origins. I'm really hopeful for this one. And all the stuff's
I would
great.
Like to apologize to you guys. According to Collider, 308 days ago, Thanos is confirmed to appear in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, well, there you go. Maybe just him and some others, though. Because they always do multiple villains. That's just the way this stuff works. I mean, you got...
I'm cool with it any way that happens. Yeah. I want to see these things. And I'm not even a big Marvel fan. I mean, I've only gotten into Marvel stuff in probably the last 5 years.
Diehard DC for a long time.
Hard DC or nothing, man.
Yeah, I remember those days. I remember those heady days of your
dark days.
Yep. Let's get into some quick news.
You're going to tune in on them and persuade them to change their mind.
You must be insane.
Wolverine opens this weekend. I already mentioned that. Everybody go see it. We'll share some of our thoughts. I assume most of us will see it before next time we get together. Let's see. Baltimore Comic Con happening September 7th through the 8th. That's right around the corner. When's
it's a good show.
Yeah.
Dragon Con is Memorial Day weekend.
That's right.
Or Labor Day weekend, sorry.
Is PAX crossing over this year again with Dragon Con, or are they different dates? I don't remember.
PAX and Dragon Con are always the same weekend.
That's right. Last year they staggered it, though, I thought, or something.
No.
Didn't they? Okay.
Always the same weekend.
Anyway, so those are coming up. Let's see. In that same vein, Dragon Con separates itself officially from co-founder and accused pedophile Edouard Kramer.
Yeah.
That's a really good move. I know they wanted to do this for a long time, and they had there were people boycotting and freaking out this year more than in the past, because some of these financial details have been leaking about how much money he would get for a year of Dragon Con. It really upset some, and to know that it's now separate and he is off on his own, he's essentially bought out his share.
Well, they dissolve the company and then new group. So.
Yeah, new group, bought out his share, new group now doing the whole thing. And I think that's just really good for them from a PR perspective. So there are people who weren't going that are now going, and that's good for those guys. Let's see. Max Landis will not be involved in Chronicle 2. Steven, what's that about?
Well, there was a lot of talk about him being involved with the sequel to Chronicle, but he came out about 2 weeks ago and said that contrary to all the reports, he won't be doing anything with Chronicle 2. It's been that way for a long time. He's going to go focus on some other projects.
He was director of the film.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
He's Fantastic Four guy now, I thought.
Yeah,
that's what he's.
What do you mean?
For. Yeah, he's directing Fantastic Four, the new one.
Landis is?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he's not related to John Landis, is he? Is he his kid or something?
John Landis's son. Oh, absolutely.
No way! That's crazy. Oh, that's totally cool. I wonder what Thanksgiving's like at that house. Let's see. Marvel may own the patent on Comixology's guided view.
Really?
That's bad.
That's weird.
This is something Rich Johnston sent me a thing just the other day. He was like, hey, man, check out this article I'm about to post. And it turns out that, or according to his research, and he did the patent search, that back in 2000, early 2000s, their digital web initiative that Marvel was doing, someone filed for a patent to create the guided view, which basically in the patent it describes just enlarging and resizing the panel to fit the display as it moves through the comic. And so I guess apparently in a follow-up, Rich sent me another one today and said, hey, Marvel came over and announced to the Comixology offices today.
So are they suing them or telling them to stop, or like what's going on?
Well, I mean, if they've known about this patent for a long time, they probably would never have let Comixology get to where they are if that were the case.
Wait a minute. What was happening today? Comixology did what?
Apparently, Marvel just had an unannounced meeting with Comixology today.
Mm. Oh.
So what, just showed up in their office and said, check this out. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
that's interesting.
And that's according to Rich Johnston over at Bleeding Cool. He's actually got a couple of really good digital comics articles up in the last couple of days, not only following this Marvel thing, but actually trying to go back and find out who really invented digital comics. Mm. And so it's
me.
At least he came by
and said hi to me at the con.
Good. Really? Comixology guy.
No, no, Rich Johnston.
Rich Johnston over at Bleeding Cool.
Got it. Okay. Well, that's awesome.
Do you guys use the guided view
I do.
Comixology?
Yeah. Like on, as your on prime? And off. It kind of depends on what I'm doing. Not, I wouldn't say primary, probably maybe half and half, but there are times I like it. Yeah.
I'll guide
I do it
through
once in a while, but I feel like it makes me read slower. I mean, I guess it's good because I'm seeing more of the art, and that's why I'm slowing down. But sometimes I want to just kind of plow through it, and I can't do that with guided view.
Is that the opposite experience? I feel like I'm – well, two feelings. One, I don't know how far I am. I feel like I don't know where I am when I'm doing guided. It's like I could be anywhere. I could be at the beginning of this thing. I could be at the end. I don't know how much longer this is going to take or how quick it's going to end. But then I also get this feeling that I'm – missing some stuff, so I don't slow down. So I'll zoom out. Like there's layout. Big splash pages I miss and things that they'll just circumvent. And so
I always go guided view and then I read the whole. I zoom in and out all the time.
Yeah,
because you miss a bunch.
Yeah,
and sometimes I mean I'm getting older.
Yeah, you are.
Sometimes no, those panels are really teeny tiny to read.
Yeah, they're little. Little tiny.
And so you do have to do the guided view, but for the most part, I don't.
I like the higher res stuff, but those are huge files. But some of the older stuff that they have in up-res for Retina and stuff, they look, you know, pretty chunky. And it's not that I can't appreciate somebody's art up close. I'm you know, I know how that works. But it sometimes you lose the, like if you're looking at a Walking Dead comic and you're right up close, Adler's stuff does not.
Doesn't hold up.
Doesn't look right. It's a little sloppy, chunky, whatever, because that's what it is close up. You pull out and then you get, oh, wow, that, you know, he really recreated that prison yard pretty well, and I just wasn't seeing it for what it was. And so, I don't know, there's some arty things going on in my head that I want to make sure I zoom in and out for. But, yeah, I'm pretty interactive. I'll stop in lots of places and move out, zoom in, go back to guided, whatever.
It's great for super suspenseful stuff like that. You don't want to see the last panel on that page until you actually get there. My eye tends to wander a little bit, and I go, "Oh shit! Look, he got his head cut off. Let me go find out why."
Sure. You know? Yeah, sure. I don't mind that. Let's see. Bob's Burgers getting comic book treatment. That's kind of cool if you're a fan. I've never been a fan of TV. I love the show, but I've never been a fan like Simpsons comics, Futurama comics. Like that kind of stuff's just, to me, it's just not the same. The medium's too disparate for me, and I don't find I get the same kick out of it.
You got to have H. John Benjamin's voice in it for it to even work.
Right. Oh, that show is so funny, though. I love it.
It's good.
The Darkness film is coming. It will feature Witchblade, because why wouldn't you?
Oh, my God. I can't wait. Who gives a shit?
Listen, The Darkness had its moments. I have a couple of trades that I really like, some early stuff.
I actually am quite friendly with the Silvestris, and Mark Silvestri's wife is like the sweetest person I've ever met in the comics industry.
Oh, wow.
She's a big fan of PvP, and she kissed my wife square on the lips once.
Whoa. So So Witchblade, though, come on, it had its moment. Look, I know a lot of people talk a lot of smack about early 90s kind of image weirdness and that stuff just doesn't hold up now or whatever, but I like going back and reading all my old Witchblades and my old Spawn comics and stuff once in a while. That was an exciting time. I kind of miss that, like, I don't know.
Have you
like
ever seen the Witchblade anime?
No, I've not seen the Witchblade anime. I've seen the Spawn animated shows on HBO, which is fantastic, but I've not seen the Witchblade anime.
The Witchblade anime is actually pretty cool. It's
So you're better than that Yancey Butler live action piece of crap they had for a while?
I like that.
It wasn't that good. It was kind of bad.
It was all right. But boy, I still care about the Darkness. But I love the Witchblade is really cool. That anime is really interesting. They really did like an anime version of it. They changed it a little bit. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I miss Turner's art. I just miss Turner generally. He should still be with us, but I used to love his art. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, man, that sucks.
So one more thing that kind of popped up late this afternoon, Scott, that kind of ties back into Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Comic-Con 1978. Back in the day, Wendy Pini, who is the one of the creators of, ElfQuest, she used to dress up as Red Sonja at the convention and run around and do a show with, I forget who she did the show with, but it was called Red Sonja and the Wizard. They thought that there was no footage that ever existed of that. Somebody just posted it up on YouTube from 1978.
Oh, awesome.
Of that. And
what?
People
who? Wait.
Go over to YouTube. And and Wendy Pini is very attractive.
Go over
to YouTube, do a search for Sonja and the Wizard 1978, and they've got about a 23-minute video
of their act,
them of them doing their act. Weird. Now it's weird. I'm almost certain.
Oh my
that
god,
it is.
Is that Richard and Wendy?
Yes.
Oh my god, that is awesome.
I was about eight, and I think that comic book was forbidden fruit in my house. Forbidden fruit. My parents wouldn't let me near that thing.
Oh yeah.
The opening of this video says Photomat Transfer Service. Oh my god, that's awesome.
Wait, what are you searching for?
Just do a search for Sonja, Sonja, and the Wizard, 1978, and you will find it.
Wizard.
Look at that.
1978. Okay. Oh wow. Oh, she's hottie.
Yeah.
Let's take a look here. Play a little bit. We got any audio on this thing? Probably a little bit.
I don't know.
Here we go.
Yeah, there's audio.
All the time of COVID history.
Oh wow. Listen to the tape. Listen to the
mighty Atlantean civilization.
The film flip.
Oh yeah, this is 8mm.
That's fantastic. Okay, let's pull her out now. See what's going on. Oh my gosh, she is like 70s hot.
Also, the wit is present, but there is a doubt as to whether this is the...
Oh, nerds, dude. These guys. This is freaking the nerdiest thing I've ever seen.
Can you imagine making, being at Warp Graphics in the 1970s?
Oh my gosh. Dude. You know what, though? ElfQuest was a piece of work. Like...
It still holds up really well.
It really
today does.
It was great. I remember my parents wouldn't let me touch it till I was like 16, but I loved it when I read it.
We Love Fine sells was selling ElfQuest shirts at my booth,
mm-hmm.
and they were selling quite well.
Oh yeah,
really? This year?
Yeah.
That's fantastic
because it's the 30th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. And there's still talk about bringing a movie back of that.
Was there an old movie, an anime or animation? Or something?
No. They're actually talking about making a live action movie.
Oh wow!
Check out the chat there. Here's a photo close up of
Wendy.
Let's see, Comic Vine. Here we go. Oh wow! Look at that. Wow, she's a hottie.
Now that's a waistline.
Yeah, dude. She looks like one of her characters. That's crazy.
Oh yeah. The other thing is, if you do want to read ElfQuest, it's available for free online.
Yeah,
they have an archive up, and you can go and read every single page.
We used to have those big freaking book versions of them that I had for a long time. I don't know where they ended up. Anyway, well, there you go. There's your quick news for the week. Let's talk a little bit about what we're reading. I don't remember what I already played here, so I'll do this.
Wait a minute. Don't leave me here alone. I'll talk. I'll tell you everything I know.
All right. Scott Kurtz, what are you reading? What's going on?
I've barely read anything, my man, because I've been swamped as hell. But at San Diego Comic-Con, I saw that First Second Publishing printed a because they had a graphic novel called Solomon's Thieves, which is a story about the Knights Templars. Or is it the Knight Templars, or is it the Knights Templar?
Knights Templar, I believe.
It's the Knights Templar, and it's a really interesting story about how it takes place when the church turned on the Templars, and they all just became like, well, they're all getting executed now.
Yeah.
And it's about three Templars that try to escape. And then I loved it. I devoured it, and it's like, yeah, this is the first of a trilogy. Well, instead of just coming out with the last two books, they just took all three of them and made a hardcover, and now it's called Templar. So I don't know if maybe it wasn't selling well enough to do individual things, but they just took book 1, 2, and 3 and went hardcover. And I picked it up, and it's really – I mean, I love it. It's really good.
And it's just called Templar?
It's called Templar, and it's published by First – it's published by First Second.
All right. That sounds interesting to me.
I haven't really been reading anything else. Oh, by the way, that Age of Ultron that I enjoyed –
yeah.
It ended stupid as hell.
I heard the end. Yeah, I've heard this from a few people. That's too bad. I still want to. I think it's worth read regardless.
It is. It is. It was a lot of fun.
May have to pick it up. I still have it written down as a thing to read. I haven't read much either. July was a beast. Nerdtacular took a ton out of me, and I still feel like I'm reeling from that. But I was given a review copy of Diablo Sword of Justice sent to me by Blizzard to review. And I just cracked that thing open and started reading it. And I really, really like the art, but I can't really speak to the story or any of that yet because I'm not far enough in. But I will try to have that entire, it's basically kind of a mini trade. I'll try to have that whole thing done by the next time we get together, and I can tell you how what I thought about it. Also, somebody had, and now I cannot remember who recommended this, but somebody said I needed to check out 100 Bullets on Comixology. And I don't know if you guys, any of you guys have ever read that.
I've got a trade sitting right over there. I haven't read it yet.
I hear it's awesome.
It's great.
Is it?
You never heard it?
No, I'd never heard of it until this person and who I can't remember who told me. Somebody, I think Nerdtacular, somebody pulled me aside and said, you got to read 100 Bullets. So I've got a couple issues purchased. I'm gonna read it. I have no idea what to expect, but I keep hearing it's just amazing. And
oh, you don't know the premise? The premise is the pitch is, the elevator pitch is great.
Yeah, you learn about someone weird, that's weird gimmick or something going on in there.
No,
right?
Just a guy shows up. It's like individual little stories about different people and their problems, and you know, and then all of a sudden this guy shows up. This bald guy shows up with a briefcase, and in it he has a gun and 100 untraceable bullets. And he says, "Solve all your problems.
Oh, wow.
Go."
Wow. Untraceable. Kill a guy. No one will know you did it.
Exactly.
Yes.
And complications ensue, I'm sure.
Nice. Not really.
Really?
Well, at least in the first couple issues, it's pretty smooth.
Is it kind of a villain of the week kind of thing where it's not the same people every time? Different guy has the gun, kills different people?
No, same guy always brings the gun.
Okay.
Different people with different situations.
Right. Different people. He shows up with different people, different situations. But then eventually they start to get into like who he is and what organization he's with later on.
It sounds fascinating. Yeah. So I'm excited to try that out. Got a couple issues of that. Mark, what are you up to?
I am catching up on Sweet Tooth.
Sweet Tooth. Hold on now.
Sweet Tooth. Jeff Lemire.
Oh, right.
Vertigo.
Okay. Yep.
And I'm about 13 issues in. I'm a sucker for anything post-apocalyptic, and this is that sort of tale, but definitely very different. The focus is on these animal kid hybrids, where all the new children that are born post this plague that ran through, you know, like the primary character Gus has antlers, so he's like half deer, and it kind of depends. Some of them are more far on the scale of animal, and some of them are a little bit more human, and some are completely half and half. So it's an interesting tale, and I haven't really gotten to a point where I've gotten into the meat of it yet. I'm still trying to figure out where it's all going, but of course post-apocalyptic, they're trying to figure out, number one, why it happened, if there's a cure for it, if this kid with the antlers is part of the problem or part of the cure. But it's really good. I'm enjoying it. I'm not a huge fan of the art. Some of the faces just kind of look really funny to me. I mean, it's clearly part of the expressive style that he's going for, but it's disconcerting to me. Mm-hmm. There's not an attractive woman in there at all. Like, even the attractive women are not drawn in any sort of way that's attractive. Mm. And the guys just look like, actually, they kind of look like zombies. And they're normal people. Just the way they're drawn, they're kind of like, but
derpy looking.
Yeah, definitely derpy looking.
Yeah.
But overall, it is a really cool story. Enjoying the fact that it's very different than anything I've read before and what they're doing with it. So enjoying it quite a bit. So Sweet Tooth.
Nice,
40 issues total, I believe. So it should not take long to get through the rest of it.
Right.
The other things I wanted to talk about briefly, I'll let Steven talk a little more about this, but I'm getting some of these Comixology subscriptions, which is something we've been asking for a while, and it's not quite there in terms of like, oh, I log in and I automatically download it. But the good thing is when you sort your purchases on Comixology, your most recent ones are right up there at the top. So when you get the email that says, hey, well, actually, they send you two. They send you one that says you've got an issue coming, and then they send you one when the issue is there. And you just go into your purchases and download, and they're right there at the top. So that's working out real nice. I actually like that a lot.
Mm.
Right. And the last thing I wanted to mention, at Nerdtacular, Steven, myself, my wife, Nicole, and Terpster did an impromptu panel on podcasting and the business behind podcasting.
It was really good. It was great.
Yeah, it was a blast. We had a lot of fun. One of the guys there, actually a couple of the guys there, were comic book podcasters, and we were trying to help them out and giving them some advice. So he was asking, you know, in this world of comic book podcasts, how do I stand out? How do I do something to make people know that my show exists? Yeah. And a great way is to talk to people like us who do a comic book show so that we can mention the name of your show.
Right.
And, so the guy's name is Aaron, and I listened to a few episodes of the show. It's fairly new, but they're doing a great job. It's called very simply The Comic Book Show.
Mm.
So just look them up in iTunes and give these guys a listen. They're really good, but I wanted to make sure we gave them a little shout out.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that guy also did a question from the floor when I did the big main panel in the main room, and he was super nice. So yeah, go check him out, support him. There's always room for more of these things.
Yep, totally.
Steven, what are you doing?
Oh, today I had a chance to sit down and read, just as Mark was talking about, the Comixology subscription. I was really worried about this when they announced it, because you have to go in through the Comixology website, you have to place your subscription there,
yeah,
and then, you know, supposedly you're able to go onto your iPad or whatever that you're reading your Comixology stuff on and get that stuff. And I was really worried that, man, I'm going to have to go and find it and purchase it and da-da-da. But as Mark said, the emails come in and tell you, hey, you got books that are ready to come in. You go in, do your purchases, download them, and read them. It's really super easy. I like it a lot. And the nice thing is, because you can sort your purchases, even if it's 2 or 3 weeks later and you finally open up the Comixology app, there they all are, just waiting to be downloaded and read. And so I find the experience so far really great. I'm subscribing to three books. One of them is Batman. So I read the new Batman 22 from Snyder and Capullo.
Yep.
And really great story. Again, when New 52 started, it took place 5 years after Heroes had been around. This one right now in this arc, they're going back to year zero and telling, how does Batman become Batman? And it's really fascinating. It's got this Red Hood gang. People may remember Red Hood as maybe possibly being who became the Joker later on.
Right.
But it's really, really cool, and I'm digging the heck out of that.
That's great.
I also had a chance to read the Hawkeye Annual number one by Matt Fraction. Art not by David Aja, and that's okay. The art styles are somewhat a little bit similar.
Sort of.
But but it doesn't even focus on Hawkeye. It focuses on what's her name?
Hawkeye Junior.
The girl.
Yeah.
She goes out to Los Angeles. I'm sorry, I'm terrible with names. But she goes out to Los Angeles because she's tired of Clint's.
Her name's Kate Bishop.
Kate Bishop.
Yep.
And just real tired of his crap. And then she gets out there and gets involved in a little trouble with some people that she crossed paths with earlier on in the series. So
she's really well written in that series, generally, I think.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
Fraction does just an awesome job in this. And going back to the Eisners, did he not win some stuff for Hawkeye this year?
He should have.
You guys remember?
I saw it in an email featured Comixology, said, winners, check these guys out or something.
So definitely for good stories. Again, we say it almost every issue. Hawkeye.
Yeah, it's such a good series.
I'm still trying to catch up with that. I've got them on my iPad. And I'm
just sit down and read them, Mark.
So yeah, good, dude. You'll love it.
It won't take you that long, and you'll blow through them really quick.
Actually, I'm behind one issue, but yeah, it's awesome. Scott, did you notice, speaking of Nerdtacular, I just want to forget this, somebody dressed up as Cole Richards.
I got a picture of it. It's awesome.
It was really rad. He showed up, and I'm like, oh, no way, dude. And we were freaking out, and he's like, yeah, I was really hoping I'd see him here. I'm like, well, that's not why he dressed up just for that, did you? And he said, no, I was going to do it. I'm a huge fan. I love everything he does. And anyway,
I'll come out next year.
He had a huge fan at that thing. Repping hard.
I'll be there next year.
All right. Comics panel. There we go. That's what
for sure.
Sweet. Well, that sounds like some good reading, everybody. Check out everything we've been talking about here, if you would. That's going to do it for a show. I want to thank everybody who has been here and helped us out and followed us and all of that. Very soon, well, I can't say who with yet because I got to sign the contract, but it looks like we got a sponsor, so I'm pretty excited about it.
Oh.
Yeah, I got to just get paperwork signed and make sure they're cool with the reads I sent them, and I think we're looking good. So the show's been growing. That's awesome. We love it. You guys have been great. Keep your emails coming. That email address, once again, is comicdorks@gmail.com. You guys have anything going on? Steven, anything big you want to mention?
Just that time of year.
It's a lot going on.
It's that refractory period after San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, after the big erection, right.
Yes, exactly.
It's Scott Kurtz, any big whoop going on for you? You got PAX right around the corner, I guess.
I'll be at Gen Con, and I'll be at PAX. We just launched our new animated series, Mappy. You should check that out.
It's great.
VPNline.com.
Really good.
And you can see that. And then, yeah, TableTitans.com and PvPOnline.com.
Yeah. And big grats to Chris Straub. I don't know if he's probably not listening, but his Kickstarter is doing awesome. Totally stoked for
him. Yeah. It's kicking butt.
Brood Hollow. It's great stuff. You guys should check that out. Mr. Mark Spagnuolo, what's going on with you?
I am actually starting my early bird pre-order for my book tomorrow.
Nice.
And oh, yay.
Yeah, we're going to launch that, and we're giving away some guild membership time with the purchase of the book that's actually worth more than a book, which is kind of cool. Yeah. So it's going to be for a limited time because it's a super valuable early bird kind of bonus that you get with it. But the book's not due out till November, but we've got to order our books soon. So in order to do that, I kind of need to know what kind of numbers we're looking at. So pre-order starts tomorrow. Just go to hybridwoodworking.com for the two people who are actually interested in woodworking that are listening to this.
Awesome. I bet there are more than that. But there are a bunch more. All right. Awesome. Make sure you check out everything else that's going on the Frog Pants Network. It's frogpants.com. The Morning Show, The Instance. Oh, geez. Too many shows to mention. Final Score. Too many to mention. Go check them out. Give them a listen. See what you think. Find us on the web, comicdorks.com. All our archives are there, show notes and more. You can also email you or email us as a reminder, comicdorks@gmail.com. On Twitter, you can follow us @comicdorks. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Scott, for Mark, and for Steven. We'll see you guys next time.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.